But at the same time, even while the categories Radcliffe women and Guatemalan women are not equal, one is a group of women from a university, and one is a group of women from a nation. The piece also suggests that there is a relationship, a complicated relationship between the two categories. This relationship is the multi-eyed aspect of Radcliffe and Guatemalan women. Radcliffe and Guatemalan women makes me profoundly uneasy. It makes me uneasy that the Radcliffe women and the Guatemalan women are presumed opposites, one privileged and one not. It makes me uneasy that at the same time the Radcliffe women and the Guatemalan women are a specific sort of joined opposites, joined by their gender, by the ties that the governments have with each other, and by the ties that they have with their governments. It makes me uneasy that Wiener more or less treats both categories of women equally. Neither the Radcliffe women nor the Guatemalan women have any depth. While there are some names mentioned in the piece, they are not really present as individuals in the poem, and it is often not clear which sentences are about Guatemalan women and which sentences are about Radcliffe women. It makes me uneasy that as nothing is attributed, I cannot stop myself from guessing at whether it was a Radcliffe or a Guatemalan woman who had to raise 5 children by herself. But the minute I guess, I have to think again and wonder about the relationship between guess and cliché and cultural assumptions. It makes me uneasy that Wiener frequently includes statements that would be true about both Radcliffe and Guatemalan women, such as they are paid lower wages than the men, as if these lower wages are in any way equivalent. While thinking about my mother's assertion that we were middle class, while thinking about Radcliffe and Guatemalan women, while thinking about women's employment in the countries with the highest percentage of women in poverty, while thinking about how the manipulation of trade barriers by the U.S. government has adversely impacted women across many different nations, while thinking about how, at the same time, the global economy empowers some women and disempowers others, I was trying to think about what sort of vision one needed to have in order to keep one eye on the neighborhood and one eye on the nation and then yet one more eye on the world. I was trying to think, in other words. I wanted to write something about Chillicothe. I am from Chillicothe. In my family, I was a Chillicothean. My parents were from somewhere else. And yet I am not really a Chillicothean anymore, and that feels obvious when I go back there. So my next thought was then, oh, maybe it is that I'm a child of Chillicothe. And I sat down to figure out what that might mean. I was trying to write something about being a child of a certain moment, of a certain class, working class, and then an adult of a different moment, of a different class, middle class. I was attempting to grow some other eyes. I wanted to write something about Chillicothe, even as my story is not the story of Chillicothe. Even as Chillicothe and I both benefit from the economic incentives that Lyndon B. Johnson's 1964 War on Poverty allocates to Appalachia, even if I take these incentives and I leave town and benefit from globalization in numerous ways, even as I continue to benefit today, even as Chillicothe's fortunes dwindle a few years after NAFTA when its industries go south, each morning I try to develop a multi-eyed focus. I would sit down at my computer, at my desk, and go into a trance and then write down whatever came up. I left Chillicothe more or less for good when I was 21, so I ended up with a lot of childhood memories, most of them personally pleasant. I kept these totems in a file, and when I got tired of gathering them, I would try to rebuild the town from the outside, from statistics, and I would arrange all these parts of Chillicothe in various patterns and try to see what sort of place the various patterns made.